Before we get started with this episode, I want to share something that I think could be a game changer for your classroom. Now, as a former special education teacher, one of the things I struggled with the most was creating activities, resources, and curriculum for my classroom. I did not realize that that was part of my job. I have spent the last 10 years developing the Autism Helper curriculum based on what was missing from my former classroom. And now we finally have a way for school districts to purchase this curriculum directly for their teachers. The Autism Helper Curriculum Access is an annual subscription that provides access to all levels and subjects of our curriculum. This curriculum is rooted in evidence-based practices, it's aligned to the standards, and we just completed our pilot case study showing the overall effectiveness. To learn more about how your district can get curriculum access, head over to theautismhelper.com and click Curriculum Access. Hi, I'm Sasha Long, special ed teacher and board certified behavior analyst. Welcome to the Autism Helper podcast. I'm here to explore different strategies to improve the lives of individuals with autism. Welcome back to the Autism Helper podcast. Today, I'm sharing my interview with Jen Adams, a seasoned special education and general education teacher and the creative force behind Teach Love Autism. Today, Jen and I are talking about ways to communicate effectively with the IEP team, both the families and the professionals in your building. Think SLPs, OTs, case managers. And we're all about consistency. How can you consistently communicate with families throughout the entire year? Jen has so many great actionable strategies. You might want to take notes during this podcast. I love all of her ideas. Jen talks a lot about the importance of having good rapport with families, which we know is so important. And she has some great actionable ways to get things started, like asking for preference on communication strategies. So let's get ready to hear from Jen on how to have great communication with both families and your colleagues throughout the year and the IEP process. Hi, Jen. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you, Sasha. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited to talk about communication with the IEP team and really this kind of holistic view of the IEP team, both families and everyone that works at the school. So I kind of want to start off with systems for communicating with your students' families. So at this point, we're like, let's say 3/4 into the school year. What are some systems that you've set up for consistent communication with your students' families, and maybe highlight on the word consistent there.
Right. Absolutely. So yeah, that is the key here. And I think one of the strongest things that you can do to create that great consistent communication system with families is that consistency itself. So coming up with something that is manageable for you, but also can work with that family as well, so that you both feel like you're getting what you need out of that communication. Because I find that sometimes, you know, we as teachers may put a lot of stress on the family to tell us everything that happens at home before, you know, the child comes to school that day. And the parent just doesn't have the capacity or the time to maybe relay every single little detail that we may want to hear. But something that is manageable that they can do to kind of set that up. And so building that consistent way that you're going to do it, whether it's via an email or a communication app or some kind of a written note that is very simplified. I typically used with a lot of my families a note that allowed for parents to do a lot of circling of things as opposed to writing out full sentences, which really helped to make that easier for the families to follow through on, because I took some of that weight off of them doing it. And then with that consistency, also just having clear expectations. And this is something that, you know, if I was 3/4 of the way through the school year, at the beginning of the year, I would have set up with the families what we want that communication to look like. So talking how I'm going to communicate with them, figuring out what works best for them for that communication piece, and kind of sharing that with each other to make sure we're on that same page to create a two-way system where we're both communicating with one another.
It's a really good point that it's not just about
you know, what's too much for the teacher, but also, yeah, what's too much for the family. They're like, no, I can't like reply every morning with what's for breakfast. And what about if some things, you know, not going well? Because I think we all go into the year with like, you know, the best of intentions and maybe very elaborate systems, but, you know, things then don't go as planned. How can we kind of pivot when we get to that situation?
So I think one of the best things we can do is be transparent with that family. So, you know, I may have set up that system where they're filling out a form or they're supposed to communicate with me in an app and it's not happening. And maybe it's not just them. Maybe for me as well, I, like you said, created this elaborate thing I wanted to do this year. I had this grand idea of how I was going to build that relationship and communication with my families. And then all of a sudden, I just can't manage it with all the other teaching responsibilities that I have. So I do think being transparent with the families and just saying something along the lines of, hey, this is what we had as our plan, but maybe we should try this, or maybe we should, instead of communicating every day, maybe it's every couple days, and just be okay with that. The system can change and alter as your needs, the students' needs, or even the family's needs and abilities may change.
And, you know, I was talking about this with a teacher recently, and this was a first year teacher that came midway into the school year. And you talking about this kind of popped this teacher into my head. And we were talking about setting up these systems, and she was like, no, Sasha, I'm talking about the IEP meeting. And I was like, yeah, I know, but get you ready for that IEP meeting.
Right.
And it was kind of like, I was like, this is like our antecedent-based intervention. And she was like fresh out of college. So she liked that analogy, but
right.
Can you talk about how this like kind of gets us ready for those IEP meetings with parents, this having this communication throughout the year?
Absolutely. So, I mean, the biggest thing I think of, and I talk with a lot of new teachers as well in the role I'm in the schools, is getting that rapport with the families as soon as possible, making sure you're communicating consistently so that the first time you are having a real conversation with them isn't that IEP meeting. And even if it's only a couple weeks into the school year, I still tell teachers you should be touching base with those families on somewhat of a regular basis, and not always for the things that maybe are going wrong, right? A lot of times families are used to getting phone calls because there's a behavior or because their child forgot their homework or there's something that just is a negative thing or perceived as negative. And that is not going to help build a great relationship with those families to get them to communicate with us better. I was actually working with a teacher who was a little frustrated because she goes, every time I ask the parent about what their child can do, they don't want to answer me. And I said, well, describe what kind of communication you've had with the family in the past. Well, they never answer their phone calls. And I, you know, stopped trying because they stopped, you know, calling me back. Well, you know, and I understand that it's hard, but if we're not setting up that consistent communication with the families, we're probably not going to have as successful communication in the IEP meeting. So that really does help lay a lot of solid groundwork to have a good relationship moving into that meeting. I often found myself that I was more comfortable going into an IEP meeting, even if it was a stressful one where, you know, there was a lot of maybe heavy topics we were going to cover, or I knew there was potentially going to be some disagreements in the meeting. But if I had a good rapport with the parent, I often felt a little better about going into that meeting.
Yes. Even, I mean, obviously we want this with all families, but like, there's going to tend to be more communication with a family that's a little bit of a higher need situation. So more than ever, you want to have that big stream of communication because then you're going to feel more confident, like you said, in those situations.
Right.
And you know, I've been on a few years ago, I was on the kind of parent side of getting the phone calls, and man, it's like a visceral reaction when you see like the school's phone number and you know it's negative and you're like, oh God. And like, it's the worst. Like it's the actual worst. And like, when it's like not, when it's like something like, you know, like a recording of like, reminder, there's a day off tomorrow. And you're like, oh, thank God. And it's just something neutral. Like, and, but I was like, God, imagine if like the teacher was like, great news, you know, so-and-so had this. I was like, what a refreshing change that would have been. And like, to be the teacher that does that.
So you know what I've been thinking a lot about? The cleaning products I use in my house. I know that might surprise you because I use these things every day. Every day I'm cleaning a counter, I'm doing dishes. And there's a lot of discussion lately about which products are safe. And I've been thinking about that. I'm like, I use these things all the time. And are these things really safe for me and my kids to be around? And I don't really have time to do research on which products are safe and which products aren't going to cause some disease in the future. And I was excited to find Blue Land because they're all certified safe and clean supplies, clean by the EPA, but they also get the job done. They're actually getting my counters clean. They're actually getting my dishes clean. And they can do it in a way with an impact that I don't have to worry about on me and my kids. So if you've been kind of thinking about this too, using safer cleaning products in your house, take advantage of Earth Day this month and celebrate Earth Month and make the switch today. You can get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/Sasha. I don't want you to miss this. Again, that's blueland.com/Sasha for 15% off. blueland.com/Sasha to get 15% off clean supplies. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended for you. All you have to do is take a quick 5-minute quiz and select items from your dynamic and personalized closet. The styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, you just swap them out for more new to you styles. Let me tell you what I love about this, how easy it is. As a busy working mom, having a few new items show up at my door, I'm just ready to go then. I don't have to sit staring at the closet. I know what to wear. I wear those few pieces on repeat for a few weeks and then I send them back. It makes the day-to-day honestly a lot easier. It's all about removing those little decisions we've got to make all day that can take some of that weight off. Right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. So just visit armoire.style/Sasha. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/Sasha to get up to 50% off your first month and never have to worry about what to wear again. So go ahead and try Armoire today.
Yes, I know myself as a parent, I have two kids in school right now. And anytime I get a phone call, I still have that same reaction. What did they do wrong? And I will say I'm thankful that the school they're at, we get a lot more good calls than we do, the ones they're doing something wrong. And the school makes that a priority. It's actually a whole school initiative to be more communicative with families for that whole reason. And I will say the culture of the school is very different. And I think some of it is because of that.
Oh, I love that. And it probably just sets everyone up for success. And I mean, yes. You see that, you know, that as the teacher administrator, and you now see that as the family side too.
Right. Yep, exactly.
So let's talk about communication from kind of the professional to professional side, because we know there are a lot of different professionals that, you know, a teacher has to communicate with. And, you know, it's easier said than done. There's not a lot of planning time and common time where everyone can communicate. People like leave sometimes the second the bell rings. What are some methods that have worked for you or that you advise teachers of with communication on the school-based side of, you know, collaboration for the IEP team?
So a lot of times I had, oh goodness, when I was an autistic support teacher in a self-contained classroom, I had so many people coming in and out constantly. and I'm sure many of your listeners can relate to that as well, because our students, you know, have a lot of needs and areas that they're working on. So there's a lot of individuals involved. I think of paraprofessionals, I think of related service providers, specialists, all of those things going on. And so one of the things I started doing was setting up scheduled meetings to touch base with those people. So at the beginning of the year, just like setting up my communication system with families, I also kind of tried to set up consistent times to either we met together if we could do it. If we couldn't, then maybe we would just do a phone call or a touch base email or something, but some kind of a scheduled check-in where we had a way to touch base on just currently what's going on, where are we headed, things like that. I also had some things on clipboards, especially for things like related service providers that would come in and out of my classroom. So maybe I didn't get a chance to talk with them. They came in, they worked with a student, and they immediately had to leave to go work with another student, maybe in a different part of the school. I had a clipboard that just had like a thing that said any notes. And of course, it had something covering it for confidentiality, but they could open it up, write in what they needed to, tell me, you know, hey, worked well today with me, in case I didn't get to see what they did, if they pulled the student. And then I could get that feedback without us having to set aside time, because there isn't always that time, you know, to do that. So that was something I did. And then the other piece kind of goes along with staying in touch with them in terms of the IEP. I know sometimes it can be feel really disconnected depending on the way your school is set up, how much you actually get to collaborate with those other IEP team members when it comes to writing the IEP and reporting on progress that the learner has made. And so I also would schedule emails, knowing things like when the IEP was coming due, I would 2 months ahead or a month ahead schedule an email to those people with our email service provider that we used at the school, just to say, hey, can you give me any updates on how things are going? And kind of automated that for myself, so I didn't have to constantly keep it as another thing in the back of my head that I needed to get it done. Because oftentimes when those things are kind of floating around, we tend to forget them.
Yes. Oh, I love the scheduling the emails. That's a great idea, because you can kind of do that at the start of the year and have those right. ready to go. Yeah.
Yep. So if you know when those documents are coming due, I used to do it for reevaluations. I used to do it if a student had, we knew had an FBA coming up or an IEP. I would just kind of set that up at the beginning of the year. So then they would automatically go out. And if one went out by accident and the meeting for some reason got rescheduled or changed, it wasn't the end of the world. I just got an update on how the student was doing anyways.
Like, great. Thank you for the update. Yeah. I love that. And I like the clipboard idea too, because so often, you know, that you have that revolving door of clinicians in and out, and you're teaching. So you can't be like, oh, hold on, OT. I did really want to know how it went. But you do really want to know how it went. So that gives that opportunity for the collaboration without having to stop what you're doing.
Yeah.
And we all know there's consult minutes, but that doesn't always happen, you know, within a busy day. So No, I love that. So the next piece I was thinking about within this IEP team, you know, it's not two sides, but it often feels like two sides. We have the school and the family. And one of the first things, you know, when we sit down at the IEP table, we ask, you know, we talk about present levels and we ask the family what they're concerned about. How do we take what the family is concerned about and turn those into real components in the IEP? I feel like sometimes there's kind of a disconnect in what the family's bringing as their concerns and how that like has a real space on the IEP.
Yeah. So I've sat in on quite a few IEP meetings as kind of not the case manager or teacher, and just kind of seen that piece as well, where the parents kind of feel like they're not heard. And in working with teachers a lot in the role that I'm in coaching them, I've made sure that they understand how important that piece is, that the parent does feel that. Again, that's also going to support that rapport building that I was talking about earlier. And they know their child best in many situations. So I often told teachers, that is your key. If you can get that parent, I can't tell you the amount of things I learned about a student that maybe was in my classroom for an entire year. And then we sat down at the IEP meeting and they told me about their favorite TV show and I had no idea, or their favorite snack and I had no idea. Because then that opened up different scenarios of things that I could talk with that student about, use to help motivate them to do different things in the classroom, or even just have conversations with the students sometimes that maybe they wouldn't open up otherwise, because I learned these things from the parent sharing with me. But I do think sometimes the parents will feel that maybe we don't always hear, especially their concerns, because sometimes we'll look at it as, well, that happens at home, school's a different environment, which it can be, but there is often times where that school-home connection can really affect the learning environment for a student in school. So I think that if we can validate the parents' feelings and concerns and make sure they know that they're being heard. So I would maybe say to the parent, you know, okay, so what I'm hearing from you is that you notice your child harms themselves when you ask them to do something. And then we talk about how do we see that happening in school, or what do we do to support that student if we see those behaviors in school, or maybe it's an academic skill that we're talking about, and how do we bridge the two? I'd often have parents say, well, I'm worried about what they're going to do after they graduate, right? Because I worked with a lot of students that were in middle school, high school, and so I would talk about how the academic skills we're learning and can be turned into functional skills, like counting. They would say, okay, we've been working on counting since kindergarten. Why is that important? Well, because when they get older and you tell them to get out five forks to set the table, can they go get those five forks? And so sometimes helping the parents to realize that their concerns are valid and also can lead to that functional piece of supporting students when they get older, I think really helps them to feel like we're working together, right? Because the skills I work on in the classroom aren't just academic things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love how that rapport piece like continues to be like that utmost important thing. And maybe even continuing on that theme, when we have, and we kind of were talking about this before, but these like heightened emotional situations, you know, everyone's like worst nightmare, like, you know, potential due process case, like we have high conflict. Advice for teachers in those situations where emotions are high and, you know, rightly so. It's, you know, it's parents' child. It's, they want what's right for their child, whether the school's in the right or wrong. And sometimes, you know, the schools are in the wrong and the teacher's just kind of in the middle too. Right. And what's your advice for teachers in those situations?
So the first thing that comes to mind is actually the same thing I would share with myself sometimes, and even with staff in my room, is remembering that it's not personal. So that parent or that other IEP team member that may be flustered in the moment, it's not personally me, it's the situation we're in. And so there's something that, you know, it's not something that I'm maybe personally doing wrong, right? We can make mistakes in the classroom, we can do something that we shouldn't, but like at a personal level, that's typically not where that issue lies. And try to remember that, that difference there. And then the other thing I think about too is one of the biggest questions that I always ask myself whenever I'm doing anything when it comes to a student is thinking about what's best for them and remembering that everybody that's seated at that table at the IEP meeting also has that same question in their head. What's best for this child, for this student? In this moment, everybody's really coming from a place of wanting that person or child to succeed. And remembering that can also help because you stay more centered in on what that student needs instead of thinking about, well, it's harder for me to organize it this way. I can't believe you're asking me to do this to help this student. And I think more of, well, this is going to help this student be successful with this, this, this. That's why we're looking at it this way and thinking that this is where we need to make a change.
Oh, the not taking it personal is really good advice. And that's really hard for me.
It is really hard.
it's hard, I think, for teaching in particular, because it's, you know, we put like our hearts into this. Like we like, they're our babies, but you know, it's not. And it's not personal. And there's a lot of background context that goes into these situations that we're not always privy to, and things that happened in previous grades and previous schools. And yeah, everyone's there with that child's best interest. And we have to keep remembering that.
I think the personal piece sometimes also stems if we go back to even that consistency we were talking about at the beginning. So there may be some personal friction between you and a parent if you haven't had that time to build the rapport with them. There maybe are some misconceptions about the relationship you have with that family if you haven't had much time to build one with them. You know, they may perceive things you do in the classroom. We know sometimes our students either can't share much about what goes on during their school day or very little. So things get assumed that happen, and vice versa with us as teachers at about what happens in the home. We're not there. So I do think that can be a hurdle that's hard sometimes that does play on that personal, you know, attack feeling. But I think if we just try to remember that everybody's there for that student and wanting what's best for them, it kind of refocuses, you know, where they need to be in that conversation.
Okay, do you have any good follow-up actions after the IEP that you found to be helpful to improve implementation and understanding from either the parent side or the IEP team?
Yes. So one thing that I've gotten better at in my experience in being in IEP meetings over the years is trying to come up with some way to kind of provide the family and even the rest of the IEP team with a summary of what we discussed in the meeting. I found it to be particularly helpful. If we can do it at the end of the meeting, that's great, but I know time is not always our friend, right? Sometimes we're in meetings for multiple hours or we're limited on the time that we have to do those IEP meetings. But some kind of summary, even if it happens after the fact, of just saying, hey, here are, you know, the results of our meeting. Here's who attended. Here are some of the points, and especially highlighting if there were any changes made that weren't previously planned. I know sometimes things come up in a meeting that we go, oh, maybe we should look at doing this. And then we're adding something in and just kind of some quick bullet points that everybody can see as a summary of what we talked about. And then I think inside that summary, it's also great to kind of outline the next plan, right? You said the implementation. So who's going to implement that new strategy? Who's going to maybe put in requests if there was, say, you know, assistive technology was requested? So who's putting that request in? Who's making sure our actual plan is getting put into motion? A lot of times it's put just on that teacher to do all those things, but sometimes the team can help with those things too. So I found that a summary is a great way to kind of like make sure everybody understood what was talked about. And then again, I also view it as I got some great advice when I was first, you know, interviewing for jobs. You know, would say to a principal after you interviewed, you might send them a follow-up email and say, thank you so much for allowing me to come and interview today, as a way to show your professionalism. I think that's the same thing you can do after an IEP meeting, which can help show that family that you're really in it there for your child, right? You're in there for what's best for them and ensuring things are going to happen.
I love that. I mean, I would like to get that email, right? Like, yeah.
Yeah, right.
You're welcome. Awesome, Jen. I loved all of these ideas. Thanks so much for joining us. Can you share with everyone where they can go to learn more from you?
Absolutely. So the first place I would recommend is my website, which is www.teachloveautism.com. I have a blog and information on there. Actually, a few blogs even about this topic of communicating with families and building rapport with them that you could go check out for further information. And then I'm also on different social media platforms. You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Pinterest. I think I got them all. And my handle there is Teach Love Autism on all of those too.
Awesome. We will link those in the show notes. Thanks so much, Jen.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Autism Helper podcast. If you liked what you heard and want to hear more, hit subscribe. It would mean a lot to me if you left some feedback. Whether I'm working one-on-one with a student, doing a podcast like this one, or presenting for a PD, my goal is always to provide as much value as I can. So your feedback really helps me make sure I'm doing just that. If you have other topics you'd like me to cover, leave in the feedback or message me on social media. You can follow me at The Autism Helper on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Pinterest, or visit my website, theautismhelper.com. Thanks again for listening.
Having the right resources for your classroom is essential to making sure your classroom is running smoothly. At the Autism Helper Shop, we have all of the resources you need to make sure you have the behavior, communication, and curriculum supports for your students. Within our shop, we have adapted books, task cards, resources aligned to the VBMAP and the ABLES, behavior plan flowcharts, data sheets, curriculum. Everything you need, whether you are an early childhood teacher or a high school teacher, we have all of the resources that will meet those students' needs. So head over to shop.theautismhelper.com to check out all of our resources.